Hey there, listeners. This is Justin with a quick note before today's episode. Audible.com is offering Beyond the Uniform listeners one free audiobook. You can see this offer, as well as a list of every book guests have recommended on the show, at beyondtheuniform.io/books. That's beyondtheuniform.io/books. Thanks and enjoy the show. Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. This is Justin Asiri, and each week I interview military veterans about their civilian experience. Today is episode number 89 with Drew Sinaki.
I'm so passionate about entrepreneurship. I think everybody should have their own business. Everybody should have one on the side. If you know, if you're a career person, you like your day job, I would still encourage you to start a business on the side. It's really liberating. You learn a lot about customers, about marketing, and so I guess the same rule applies to those who are still in the military.
Well, I really, really enjoyed this interview. I think that you all will as well. Drew is an awesome guy. He runs a site called nerdmarketing.com, which you should check out. He runs a podcast. He's very well spoken, very succinct, and some extremely high quality advice. But the top three reasons I would give you to listen to this episode, first of all, he talks about everyone being an entrepreneur. And he talks about how no matter what you're doing, whether you're in the military, whether you're in another job, you can do a startup on the side. And he talks about his own journey and how he used an MBA and his first job to gain confidence to start his own company. But if you have that confidence, you can do it right now, today, wherever you're at. And he gives some great advice on how to do that. Second of all, lifestyle. So I'll link in the show notes to an exceptional article that Drew wrote that I think about more than anything right now about lifestyle businesses. And he talks about comparing this to starting a high-tech startup and making billions of dollars that comes with a lot of risk and a lot of work versus growing a project, growing a company, and having that be a passive source of income or a lifestyle business or something that still generates money but not with the extreme risk, extreme volatility, and extremely stressful lifestyle that the alternative entails. So he talks about two things in general, e-commerce and productized consulting, both of which are easy and ideal for vets to use to start out without a tech co-founder. And so that's definitely worth listening to. And then third, he talks about finding and growing a functional skill set. And those of you who have listened to my interview with former PepsiCo CEO, Steven Reinemund, you'll remember he talks about this hip pocket skill set of building and growing and fostering the skill that's going to help you in your career and throughout your career. In an upcoming interview with Cal Newport, the author, he talks about developing a rare and valuable skill that you can use in basic economics to obtain a rare and valuable job and lifestyle. And Drew's got some great thoughts on how you find that rare and valuable skill, how you find that hip pocket skill that you want to invest in. He's done it with email, with marketing, with e-commerce, and you'll hear from his incredible life of just a variety of things where he's investing his time in different ways that he is reaping the rewards of having built up that expertise. As always at beyondtheuniform.io, you are going to find show notes and other great resources. You'll find links to everything that we discuss in this interview. Check it out at beyondtheuniform.io. Sign up for our newsletter. Hopefully, I'll be improving that based on what I learned from Drew. And enjoy my interview with Drew Sinaki. Joining me today in New York City is Drew Sinaki. Drew, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Happy to be here, Justin.
So for listeners, I wanted to give a quick background for Drew. He's a founding partner at Empire Growth Group, which is a hybrid consulting agency, service provider, and investment vehicle. He started out at Harvard, after which he served in the Navy as an intel officer for 4 years, and then went on to the Stanford Graduate School of Business. After a role at Commerce TV in business development, Drew co-founded Design Public, which is an inventory-less e-commerce company focused on the home furnishings market, which Drew bootstrapped from zero to seven figures in under 1 year, eventually selling the company after 8 profitable years. Drew also runs the site Nerd Marketing, which we'll get into, where he writes about marketing automation and customer segmentation rules that have driven over $100 million in transactions in 2015. So, Drew, to kick things off, I always like to ask about the point at which you knew you were going to leave the military and how you approached that decision.
I think I always knew that. I didn't really go in with the intention of making it a career. No, I like the idea of serving my country and traveling and seeing the world. So I joined the ROTC program, or I applied for ROTC. And I always looked at it as sort of a, 4 or 5 year thing. I guess I had the option of sticking around if I loved it, but and I did love it, but I knew I wanted to get out from the get go. That was always the plan.
And as you thought about leaving, how did you decide to go back to grad school versus industry? And do you have any advice for vets about that decision?
Yeah, I think it was lack of confidence, really. I don't know if you were the same way, Justin, but you're there in your third year of service, and you're obligated to give 4 years, at least I was. And I knew I kind of wanted to get out, and it would be a good time after my next deployment. And I didn't really know what was out there. I didn't really know what business was. I knew I didn't want to go to law school. And it was really just from talking to some of the other officers on the ship, say like, hey, what, they all had heard of a guy. It's like, you heard of it like we're in a POW camp. Like I'd heard of a guy who got out, and he went to business school. And I'm like, oh, that's kind of interesting. Like I knew I liked leadership and management. I loved working with people. Maybe I should apply to business school. So I did. And it was probably the safe thing to do. I think we'll probably get into this, but looking back now, there was a big opportunity there to just go direct into industry, right? To like, I was in Seattle, so to like join Amazon, probably would have learned a lot more about e-commerce than I would have going to Stanford, right? But I didn't know that, and I didn't really know what business was. I didn't know how to read an income statement, so I went to business school.
Yeah, my path was very similar, and I think for most people I've had on the show that went to business school, it was a similar thought of just kind of extending your option value and figuring out what the options are. Do you have any advice for, because I love that thought of someone, like let's say stationed in Seattle, going directly to an Amazon. Do you have any advice on what someone might do while on active duty to get a sense of what that immediate next step might be or where they might want to work?
If you think it's somewhere around the world of business, I would encourage you to start something while you're on active duty, like a side business. And I wish I had done that. That would teach me much more about business than going to business school. And, you can dip your toe in the water of it and think of it about it. It might be something you want to go into after you get out of the military.
And for listeners, I'll put in the show notes a couple other episodes, Ian Folau and a couple others who talk about starting companies on active duty. But it seems like such a great way to get your feet wet, maybe make a little bit of money, but also get a taste and start building these skills. Because I agree with you, Drew. It's much, much easier to learn through action, I think, especially for veterans, rather than in an academic environment where it's a little bit more detached from the reality of an experience.
Right. I think for me, personal freedom is like a big driving force. It's why I became an entrepreneur, why I ultimately didn't want to do the military, and why I didn't like working at companies. I did my summer internship at Goldman Sachs, right? Like I knew that wasn't for me, although I love the markets, but I really like personal freedom and just having my own business. And I think, I always want to have my own business, and I'm so passionate about entrepreneurship. I think everybody should have their own business. Everybody should have one on the side. If you're a career person, you like your day job, I would still encourage you to start a business on the side. It's sort of it's really liberating. You learn a lot about customers, about marketing, and So I guess the same rule applies to those who are still in the military.
I think that's great advice. It does bring so much passion and learning, and there's so many advantages to having something, even if it's just a passion product. It doesn't even have to be something that generates income, but something that you're able to pour your creativity in and grow, and it's just such a great way to continue to learn.
Right.
And I wanted to ask about your experience at Commerce TV, because you worked there in a business development for just over a year, and in particular, I was just wondering, in retrospect, was that a valuable experience to get kind of a business development experience before starting something on your own? Or would you think, you know, do you think you could have gone directly into starting Design Public from business school?
It's funny you bring that up because I didn't even remember I worked there. It was like a blip. I mean, now I'm 45. I'm however many years out of the GSB that is. But that was the first year, year and a half after I got out. And I think for me, it was all about confidence. And really going to get my MBA was about confidence or lack thereof. Like I didn't have the confidence to go start my own business. So I went to business school. And I don't know that I had the confidence to start my own business again. Mm-hmm. So I joined Commerce TV, and it was sort of the quintessential, funded Web 1.0 startup, right? Where they raised a lot of money. We never really had any revenue, had a huge team, and the markets turned and it imploded. But what it taught me was just that I got this. Like I see how these guys are running this company, and I can do this. And when I look at that experience, that was my primary takeaway. It just gave me the confidence to do my own thing. So I would say, if you already got that confidence, you don't need to go to a Commerce TV or even an MBA program. You can just start.
I love it. And one of the things I love about that for listeners too, is I just think of all the people I've spoken with and myself included, who agonize over these decisions of our first job out of the military or out of a grad school program or out of undergrad. And I love that this year and a half experience wasn't even in your mind. You know, I hope for listeners that kind of limits the pressure they put on themselves to really nail that first job. Of course, it's important to find a job that's going to set them up for their future, but just to realize that most of us will switch our jobs so many different times. We'll get it wrong. We'll figure out something else. And so to not put too much pressure on finding the absolute perfect job, because it's probably something you're not even going to remember, 15 years down the road.
And that's probably unlearning some of the rules we've learned in the military, where we're so focused on our next billet. Mm-hmm. And I think, civilian life isn't like that, right? Like, you can join a company, and if you don't like it in a couple months, you can punch out, right? Yeah. And you can go in, and it can be about you. You can go in and you can say, I'm going to take this sales job because I want to learn how to sell. And as soon as I learn that, I'm going to go do my own thing or get a better job. But, you kind of call the shots a little bit more than you did when you were, you sort of had to wait for the detailer to tell you where to go. Mm.
And what was the genesis of Design Public? Do you remember the moment when you first had that idea of what you wanted to do?
Yeah. So my business school class graduated in 2000, and there was a recession then. I mean, it was smaller than the one in 07, but I would say, we were the class that was graduating, giving the middle finger to McKinsey, Goldman Sachs, saying, we're going to go join pets.com and be millionaires, a year out. And of course, we all did do that, and we were all unemployed, like 6 months, a year out of graduation, like 50% of my class was unemployed. Mm. So at that point, everybody started to say, what do I really want to do if becoming a billionaire a year out is off the table? For me, for me personally, I love design. And I started thinking, maybe I'm going to come up with a line of product, like furniture. I really love product design. I love furniture design. I started going to some trade shows, and what I found was, there really was a lot of stuff already out there, and the need was on the marketing side. And this was at the time where people were going to Google to search for things, and I realized that I think more and more people were likely to buy stuff like designer furniture or any furniture really through the internet as opposed to going to a local store. It was kind of counterintuitive, but I figured there were enough people out there online that they would do that. So I started a small I just rolled up my sleeves and built a website to sell some of the lines that I liked at a recent trade show, fully intending to come up with my own line someday. But, people started buying like within a week, and the thing took off. And my business partner, I had a business partner, he and I just said, maybe we'll design a line of product someday, maybe not. But for now, we're really much more passionate about entrepreneurship and business than we thought. And certainly more passionate about that than about design. So that was the genesis of that business.
And I know we'll get into nerd marketing in a little bit, but I've really appreciated as I've read your articles, especially, you know, it relates to what I do at Storybox. And so as I've read your articles, I've gotten these little snippets of your journey with Design Public. And so one of the things I wanted to ask about was, what was one of the most difficult points when you were growing Design Public and what you learned from that experience?
Sure. So we grew pretty quickly. This, for those of you who aren't familiar with what Design Public did, or it's probably, you know, 99% of the listeners, but it was a dropship internet retailer. So we thought of ourselves as a software company. We basically had a little storefront online, and the orders would come in to us, and we built a little piece of software to sort of vector them to any number of 150 different designers who would fulfill the order. So think of eBay or Etsy, but mostly for design. And so that was the business. It grew pretty quickly, very low overhead. We had a small team in San Francisco. And at one point, I think it was 2007, we had another big recession in this country. And I think revenue cut in half. It dropped 50% in a matter of months. We had to lay off some of our team. We wanted to downsize out of the office space we were in. We wanted to turn more over to a virtual team. We want to do all these things. But really, the recession was what triggered that. And it was one of the more difficult times running that company. It was really the first year we ever took a big step backward. And it was a huge, huge step backward in terms of our growth and our revenue and things like that. So that was the hardest period. I would say, what did I learn from that? I think that's what ultimately drove us to sell the business a couple of years later. So when times are good, you know, why are you going to sell your business? My business partner and I would say, like, let's run this thing forever. Maybe we just hire a GM to run it, and it's going to be like a dividend paying stock to the both of us. You know, why, particularly in e-commerce, why would we sell something for a 3x EBITDA multiple when we could just run it for 3 more years and take that cash out of the business? So it's really something that was on the back burner. We never thought much about it. And then when your revenue gets cut in half, you know, you say you go from $10 million to $5 million in revenue, you're thinking like, oh, wait a minute, there's a lot more risk in this thing than I thought. I'm not really diversified. I've got all my eggs in this one basket, and maybe I do want to sell this. Maybe I do want to take some money off the table at my, you know, whatever I was then, 35 or something. And really, like 2007 put those wheels in motion. We said, okay, what do we need to do to sell this? We can't sell it now because it's dying right now. We've got to revive this business. We've got to grow it for 2 or 3 years to show some growth and to show that it's sustainable. We've got to do things like have standard operating procedures for the business. You know, we need an operating manual. We need to convince the buyer that this thing is a turnkey business, that they don't need us around because we don't want to be tied into running the business after we sell. So really, all those balls were put in motion because of that recession.
That's really incredible, man. And I'm thinking even, you know, when I think of drop shipping, I think of 4-Hour Work Week with Tim Ferriss, but, you know, that wasn't even published till 2007, and you guys started this in 2003. So I'm just imagining you must have been at amongst the forefront of this thought of drop shipping and to kind of like bring that idea further into market is really incredible from the timing standpoint.
I think we were. I think we were one of the first dropship retailers, one of the first retailers to blog. Like, we were just riding this internet trend. And now I don't know that I would start a dropship retailer, but I do remember when that book came out. At the time I read that, and I'm like, I could have written this book. This was me. You know, for several years, this was me before 2007 put us on a different trajectory. But yeah.
And Not to jump too far ahead, but you know, you and I were talking before we started recording about an article you recently wrote at nerdmarketing.com talking about, I don't want to be a billion-dollar company, here's what I want instead. And you started to talk about this with Design Public, but I'm curious how your thinking about entrepreneurship and running and growing your own company has evolved over the years?
Sure. So I sold my business to a small private equity group. And since then, I've sort of been doing private equity or consulting for private equity, which means company a fund that buys private companies. And so I've oscillated between consulting and operating. Most recently, I was the CMO of a big streetwear brand. And I've sort of refined my thinking about what kind of businesses I like. The whole experience has taught me that there's a lot more risk in business than you think, you know, than you think about, especially if you are fixated on things like TechCrunch or Fast Company or business magazines that really only highlight the rocket ship companies, you know, the companies that are trying to become billion-dollar companies. In my space, in the e-commerce space, that's say like Bonobos or Warby Parker or something, or Harry's Razors. Everybody loves them. Everybody talks about them all the time, and everybody wants to be that company. But there's a lot more risk in that than you think, right? Like there aren't that many exits from that space. They're really hard to run. It's hard to build a brand. And meanwhile, while everybody's attention is there, on a much smaller scale, but still could be very lucrative scale, there exist these lifestyle businesses. And it was a business like my business at Design Public, which, you know, at the time I felt like I was underachieving relative to my business school peers. But now that I'm 45 and married with kids, I was really happy then. Like you could make almost however much you want in cash out of the business. You don't work 9 to 5. You kind of work when you want to work. You systematize the whole thing to free up your time. And it really didn't cause a lot of stress. So that is my model for a business. I think if you want that, it's a lot more achievable with a lot less risk than shooting for the moon and trying to, you know, raise money and become a billionaire. So that was the point of that article. That's my passion right now.
And I'll link to that article in the show notes. But I love that thought of, first of all, recognizing the absurd amount of risk that goes along with startups. That I agree, we become numb to that because we see headlines about the very, very few that are instant successes or take off or have this explosive growth, whereas the reality is far from that. And I love, you know, you talk about in your article how these hyper successful, like a company like Bonobos, yes, they're recognized on the streets of New York. Yes, they're speaking at conferences. There's so much pressure to go with that, and the amount of travel, the board that's always pushing them to go further, like the amount of stress and external pressure that comes along with that is so extreme. And I love just the picture you paint of how there's a middle path of having more autonomy while still having, you know, financial success, you know, probably not to the extent of someone like Andy Dunn over at Bonobos, but even still not having nearly all the strings that go along with that. And one of the things I wanted to ask about is if a veteran is listening and thinking of starting their own company, and what you're saying sounds appealing, what advice do you have for them about starting their company and going down this path of more lifestyle than high-tech growth startup?
Yeah, well, I think e-commerce is perfect for that because it's not SaaS. It's not software. You don't have to find a developer or learn how to code to build it, right? So it makes it easier right there. We're just talking about buying and selling, which is as old as humanity, right? So my advice would be, hey, maybe you want to start online with an e-commerce business, sell something. And probably the easiest way to do that right now is to figure out Amazon, is to not do the heavy lifting of setting up your own brand and your own store, but really just, you know, figure out what products might be in demand on Amazon and work to source those products and just get some experience there. Like Amazon represents 1/3 of all transactions. There are more product searches there than on Google right now. So the market's there. Like that's the nice thing. Go there, learn e-commerce, get some traction, learn how to figure out what's in demand, what customers want. And then, you know, once you've, the beauty of an Amazon business is you could do it on, you know, a couple hours a week if you wanted, or you could do it full time. So really it could just be a total side business you have fun with. The other piece of advice I might recommend is thinking about productized consulting. So again, very low barrier to entry, super easy to start. But figure out one thing that you have of value that other people would pay for, whether it's executive coaching or project management coaching or, you know, consulting or whatever it is, you know, graphic design, and try to productize that as much as you can, and start selling that service, right? Sell your own time to make money. And ideally, like, you want to divorce your time from your ability to make money, but in the short run, it's a great way to start selling online.
That's great. And I wanted to ask about resources you would recommend. And we'll talk about in a second your work with Nerd Marketing. And that's the first resource that I would recommend for listeners. I'll add that in the show notes. I would recommend it for two reasons. First, just to see how Drew, in this endeavor, how he is building content, promoting content, creating funnels. I think just seeing the structure that he's creating is educational in and of itself. But then also the number of resources he provides to those of you listening who are thinking about e-commerce. You know, you can save yourself thousands of hours of time and headache by, you know, learning from a few hours of his content on his site and learning from the things that he's helped other businesses with. But Drew, I wanted to ask you, what other resources would you recommend? What are books or podcasts or courses or things that you think have helped you or would help listeners if they're thinking of going down this e-commerce or productized consulting route?
I really, you know, for, let's see, I really like this guy, Ramit Sethi, here in New York. He blogs at IWillTeachYouToBeRich.com. And he's his stuff is just, it's really solid training on, you know, that really spans from getting started making $1,000 on the side all the way up to, you know, how to build your own product and source your own product and, you know, deliver your own product online. So I think if you're going to limit yourself to online, if you're going to think about, I want to start a digital business or an online business, his blog is a great place to start. There are a lot of resources there. Offline, I don't know. I don't know. It's not my world. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I mean, I'm thinking of other resources that I really like. I do recommend looking at my blog because I think your odds are you're not as passionate about database marketing as I am. But watch how I'm turning a personal passion into a side business. Like I write a lot of good content about it. Watch how I collect email addresses and then nurture those email addresses and then get people to buy a couple things, courses and consulting services through the website. So I think that, you know, just tearing down my own site. In particular, if you go to nerdmarketing.com/double, I've got a short online course that's all about how to grow your online business, and that might be worth taking. So let's start there.
That's great. And I'll add those for listeners in the show notes so you can find all those links. And maybe let's just delve into that then. So you've been doing a couple things since Design Public, and we can talk about each of those. But what led you to start Nerd Marketing, and what does your life look like on a week-to-week basis right now with Nerd Marketing?
Sure. It started as drewsanaki.com and people couldn't spell Sanaki. So I changed it to nerdmarketing.com. I've been doing it for 3 years. It was my personal blog. So it's no longer a personal blog. Now it's more about, just lessons I've learned along the way. I would say, informed through the eyes of a 45-year-old father, because I think that's a key nuance. It's about, doing less better. Right? Because the one thing, the biggest impact on my life as an entrepreneur was not the military. It was not Stanford. It was having kids. Like, as soon as you have kids, your appetite for risk changes. Your work week goes from 7 days a week, 24 hours a day to like 9 to 5, Monday through Friday, because you want to be with your kids otherwise. And I feel like I can get the same, if not more, done now than I could in my 20s. And it's kind of because I'm smarter about it. And I'm trying to put those kind of, you know, what exactly am I smarter about? Well, I'm trying to put that into the blog. And like marketing tactics that work, merchandising tactics that really work, how to run a team. So all that is going into nerd marketing.
I'm just in love with this thought lately of borrowing experience from other people. And so finding someone like you who's really passionate about one area where someone can just do a deep dive and save a lot of time and be much more efficient in learning from someone who's done it before. But I like what you're saying too is about how kids can be this forcing function of accomplishing more in less time. And there's this great article by the founders of Shutterfly where they talk about how the first year of running their company, they worked 20-hour days. And when they started to scale that back to 13-hour days, they got, they realized the stuff that they were spending those extra 7 hours on every day were so useless. And they were like the lowest priority items that never really delivered any value. And so I'm a big believer that you can, if you're smart about it and strategic, you can accomplish more with less time. You can be more resourceful and require less resources. So I think that's great advice.
Yeah. One of my biggest business learnings was again, not an MBA thing, but it was the 80-20 rule. And I kind of didn't get that until I got into database marketing. And I started learning about it in database marketing. And then I realized it applied throughout my business. So, Pareto's principle, basically 20% of your customer, if you're a standard retailer or standard business, 20% of your customers drive 80% of the revenue, or 20% of your products will drive 80% of your revenue. 20% of the web pages on your site are the most popular ones. And as soon as you realize that, it's so liberating to know that, I don't have to do a full web overhaul, web design overhaul or something. I only got to focus on like three pages. Or, the idea of marketing a product catalog of 100,000 products is killing me. Well, I only have to focus on the top 10. Stuff like that has been really eye-opening for me. And it's helped me grow my businesses. Because if you can grow that 20%, it's a lot easier to grow your business.
And what would you want listeners to know about Empire Growth Group and the work that you do there?
I never really even talk about Empire Growth Group. It's sort of a shell company for all these other things I do. And nerd marketing is not my day job. So right now I'm the CMO of a SaaS company. And I think that's also kind of done through Empire. I think what you should know about Empire, really what it represents, is that you can do a lot of different things. You don't have to have a single label for yourself, right? Like you can do a little bit of blogging. You can have this career, that career, run two or three things on the side. Like there are no rules anymore. And that's a big thing. When you get out of the military, you don't always have to fit into one or two buckets. I think Empire Growth Group represents, like you said at the beginning of the podcast, everything from I've invested in some things, I'm on the board of some things, I'm running something now, and I've got my content site on the side. So I would encourage you just to have fun and experiment, and that's what I want you to take from Empire Growth Group.
And how do you guide how you spend your time? Because I love this thought of being able to pursue multiple things simultaneously. Do you go kind of where the energy is flowing, where the passion is?
It's terrible advice, by the way. It's whatever you multitask, it's not a good thing.
Yeah. Right? So how do you determine, like in a given day or a given week, what guides where you spend your time or what you focus on?
I think about containers. I think about, I am going to grow this container until it throws off, say, $100,000 passively. And then I'm going to call it a day, and I can now invest my time and effort into another container. Or maybe the number's a million or whatever it is for you. I would sort of single focus on one container at a time until you get them up and running. In my case, with a business, I might, get it up to that point and then hire my GM or hire a project manager to work on it. And then I want to move on to the next thing because, like you, Justin, I'm an ENFP. Like I want to keep doing different things, and it's always a challenge not to do it. So one of the things I've had to do is just have discipline around how I try different things. In other words, I can't take on too much at one time. I've got to get a container up to a certain income level before I stack it. And the only reason why you see me doing several now is because, again, I'm 45 and I've been doing it for like 15 years. So, you know, the Drew at 30 did not have multiple containers, right? Like, going on first.
I love that. And I think back to that 80-20, I just imagine the time and energy it takes to get to, let's say, $100,000 in passive income is dramatically different than then taking it from 100,000 to a million, you know? And so to realize like, hey, I'm going to invest in this container and then I'm going to move on to the next thing. And it just seems like such an efficient use of time and also keeps you interested and active and learning and growing. And the path you're describing sounds very appealing.
Well, for me and my personality type, it's a good fit in my skill set. I think other people are great at taking that $100,000 or $1 million company to 100 million. And those are people who are much better at scaling and process management and stuff like that, you know, that I am not good at. I know that. I know what I'm the best at, and it's really getting from zero to that level to building in the early stages. And then I'm not as good or I'm not as excited about it, but they probably go hand in hand. So it's kind of knowing yourself and knowing what's in your wheelhouse.
And, that'll maybe be the last thing that I ask is, so one of the things before we got on the call that I was admiring about your story is that it seems like you've built up a functional focus and a huge amount of knowledge and experience around e-commerce marketing. And I recently spoke with the former CEO of PepsiCo, Steve Reinemann, who's a former Marine. And he was just talking about how he encourages veterans to cultivate a hip pocket skill or this area of focus really early on in their career where they can develop a lot of expertise and then, like you said, really leverage that, whether it's consulting or in different projects, and really use that body of knowledge. And I'm talking in a couple weeks to the author Cal Newport, who wrote this book, So Good They Can't Ignore You. And it's the same thing. He talks about not following your passion, but just really building up a skill set. And if you have a rare and valuable skill set, you can use that to obtain rare and valuable work. And I'm just wondering, if you have any advice for veterans about picking that skill set or finding that skill set that they may want to really invest in. It sounds like in your story, you kind of stumbled into realizing that e-commerce marketing was this passion point and it wasn't initially what you approached. But just any thoughts you have on developing that core skill set?
Well, I think it's a great idea. And I talk about a T-shaped marketer, right? Where you know a little bit about all these different things, all these different acquisition channels. Maybe you know a little bit about SEO and content and email and paid and Facebook ads and Instagram, but you go deep on one specific thing. And, for me within marketing, I would say that one thing is probably email, but I like that approach. And I think if you do have that kind of mastery of one marketing channel or marketing technique, or area, I think you can charge a premium for your services. And I think it's a good idea. So what was the second part of your question? How do you figure out what that is?
Yeah, like how do any thoughts on how someone might uncover, especially just I'm thinking of those who are listening who are on active duty, who they don't even have that knowledge yet of what the different functional areas are. And so
right.
The thought of like, man, how do I put my bet on which one I want to really invest in learning? Like how might they go about uncovering what that functional area might be of interest?
I think you got to try stuff and just throw spaghetti up against the wall and see what sticks. It's like, I mean, Justin, you remember business school, like the marketing I learned in marketing class is nothing like what I do every day. Right. And so you can only learn so much from a book or from a class, I guess is what I'm saying. And, just get out there, try stuff. That's the only way I think you're going to figure it out. So, it's really putting a lot of pressure on yourself to leave the military and think that you've got it all figured out, maybe what that one skill is or what your career path is going to be. Certainly, it didn't work out that way for me. I had no idea. I had to try a bunch of different things. So I would encourage you to do the same and not be stressed. If you are in the military and you don't know what that one thing is, don't be stressed about it.
Yeah.
You'll figure it out.
And I love what you had said earlier on that it's not like in the military. If you don't like it, you can move on. You can try something else. The The risk associated with trying something new is so low. If you get it wrong, you just try something else, and that's, you celebrate the learning that, like, hey, at least I know I don't want to do that.
Yeah, and I would say also that you'll know when you find it, just like you probably know when you find your spouse, right? It's, for me, I did my, when I was in the military, I knew it wasn't for me. Like, I knew it. I knew I was having fun. I would get something out of it. I enjoyed parts of it, you know, and but I knew it wasn't for me. And the same, like, I went to Goldman, and I did a consulting internship. So that was an investment banking internship, a consulting internship. And the way I knew both weren't for me was I was looking at the clock constantly. Like, when do I get out of here? You know, when do I have to stop listening to this guy who's managing me? I just knew it wasn't for me, and I couldn't get out of there fast enough at the end of the day. And when I started my business, I started doing marketing there. Like, I achieved flow, you know, like, I could work for days without showering or like eating. Like, it was crazy. And I just loved it. I didn't care what time it was. I really loved what I was doing. So that to me was just a huge honking signal that I had found what I want to do. So I would say, you know, you're not going to figure it out through your brain. You're not going to, like, think your way into what you're passionate about. The only way you're going to do it is by trying a bunch of things, and you're going to feel it when it happens.
I love that comparison to finding your significant other. I think that's, like, such a true thing. It's like, no, you'll know, however you've made every major decision in your life, you'll kind of know when that happens.
Yep.
Well, I know I've asked a lot of questions. I always like to keep the last one open-ended and just say, you know, knowing that you've got a group of active duty and recently transitioned veterans listening to the show, is there anything that we didn't cover that you'd want to say to them and leave them with as final words of wisdom?
Yeah, I would just wish you all good luck. You know, I think if you are interested at all in digital marketing or online business, check out nerdmarketing.com. I would also encourage you to email me, drew@nerdmarketing.com. I always like helping out other veterans. And if I can be of service at all, I will help you out.
Surface, surface, surface.
Thanks for listening. Three important notes before you go. First, Audible.com is offering a free audiobook for Beyond the Uniform listeners. I love Audible. I get 3 books a month, and it's a great way to use net, or no extra time, to polish off books while you run, drive, etc. If you go to beyonduniform.io/books, you'll not only find this offer, but you'll also find a list of every single book that has been recommended on this show. One in particular I'd recommend is The Hard Thing About Hard Things. This is a great story of determination and also a glimpse at what startups are really like. That's at beyonduniform.io/books. Second, there are so many great resources out there for veterans, it can be difficult to know all about them. That's why at beyondtheuniform.io/directory, you'll find a list of every single resource that's been mentioned on the show or that I've been able to find. You can also add your own if you find one I've missed. Lastly, I've put together several different free ebooks that provide data for veterans about their civilian career possibilities. This quantitative information serves as a great complement to the qualitative interviews I do each week. Go to beyonduniform.io, click on resources, and you'll be all set. Have a great week, and I'll be back next week with more interviews with military veterans about their civilian career.